He was a nice old man. Exploding in an oxygen-fueled fireball isn't the ideal way to go. I bet those investigators will be finding bits of him all over the place along with my vibrators. But he's also a dick for blowing up my condo. I hope wherever he is right now, he's feeling really bad about it. Kat asks, "So what's next?" I turn from the windows and walk back to my desk, where I've spent the last several hours making calls. Everyone who had an appointment this week had to be rescheduled, which was about as fun as getting a root canal. High-powered people in the midst of marital counseling aren't generally the most understanding lot. More than one demanded that I come over to their home instead of inconveniencing them, and hollered at me when I declined. Because, yes, I'm so sorry my life blew up and your session will be delayed a week. How rude of me. Next, I have to find a place to live, sign a bunch of paperwork with the insurance company, and buy a new wardrobe, along with furniture, dishes, flatware, and whatever else. Everything else. Thanks again for the clothes, by the way. I'm wearing a blouse I know must be yours because it's all stretched out over my tits. That could be Chloe's. She just had a baby. Her boobs got totally bigger. She went from an A cup to a B cup, honey. That's not exactly getting bigger. Kat grumbles. I'm sure AJ would disagree. She pauses for a second and then says, Speaking of Chloe, I talked to her this morning. I have my coffee cup in hand, halfway to my mouth, but stop short at the tone in Kat's voice. And? She exhales a worried breath. And AJ was taking another nap. Oh, shit. I sink into the captain's chair behind my desk. I know. I'm really worried, too. What do you think we should do? Talk to her about it, definitely, before we try to do anything else, like force him to go see a doctor. Now it's my turn to pause. Which reminds me. Kat knows what I'm going to say before I utter another word. I made the appointment with the fertility specialist this morning. It's this Friday at 3. Her voice is subdued. She's trying to be strong because I'm neck deep in my own pile of shit, but I know her. On the inside, she's having a meltdown. I'm going with you, I say promptly. When she doesn't respond, I demand, What? She says quietly, I haven't told Nico. Oh, honey. My heart goes out to her. She tells Nico everything, so for her to withhold this, she must really be terrified. Don't say anything to Brody, okay? She pleads. I'll tell Nico, I promise. I just don't want... You don't want him to worry unnecessarily if there's nothing wrong. I finish gently. A little sniff comes through the other end of the phone. Yes. Sweetie, everything's going to be fine. I promise. I double promise, okay? Not knowing is the worst part. Once you know what you're dealing with, one way or the other, you can figure out a plan to move forward. My voice turns wry. Trust me, I know. Kat huffs out of breath. Oh, fucksicles, I'm such a twat. What have you done now? St. Patrick's Day is only a few weeks away, and I haven't even started to plan for our annual movie night. Every year since we became friends, Kat, Chloe, and I spend St. Patrick's Day together, watching old movies, eating ice cream, and drinking too many margaritas. It's basically the exact same thing we do every year on Kat's birthday, but instead of trying to cheer Kat up because it's the anniversary of the day her father left, we're trying to cheer me up because it's the anniversary of my parents' deaths. We really need to get happier reasons for annual get-togethers. If I'm still crashing at Brody's, we should have it there. You should see the size of the TV in the living room. I think it can be seen from outer space. You think you'll still be crashing at Brody's in 3 weeks? I sigh, gazing out at the window again. We'll see. Whoa, whoa. Was that a swoony sigh? Did Grace Titanium Stanton just make a super swoony sigh? Get a grip on yourself, Catherine. I don't swoony anything. You totally did, she breathes, a thrill in her voice. I warn, Cat. She goes all practical on me. Oh, okay, so you're saying he's just another random pony ride for you? I roll my eyes. You know very well I'm not saying anything of that sort. Of course you're not, because I was there when you said, and I quote, he makes me feel like everything bad that's ever happened to me was worth it because it was all leading up to him. I say dryly, so now you have a photographic memory. Congratulations. That would have been very convenient when you were trying to find that Hermes scarf I lent you last year that you lost. After a short pause, she asks, you know he's in love with you, right? The flush starts in my chest, creeps up my neck, and invades my cheeks where it starts to burn. He did mention something to that effect. She gasps, he told you he loves you? Not those three words, but the general idea. Did you say it back? She sounds overly excited, like I've just told her she's won a cruise to the Bahamas. Of course not. Why, of course not? Well, for one thing, it's way too soon. Her voice sours. It's never too soon to tell someone how you feel, dumbass. I recline in my chair and close my eyes. Okay, I'm not saying the L word, but he is amazing. Everything I could possibly want in a man. Kind, funny, smart, good-looking, successful, passionate. Good God, is he passionate. For someone who looks like the boy next door, he fucks like the devil. Wait, I thought you said he was respecting you and refused to give you the D? There might have been a little slippage. Cat laughs. What, like you tripped and fell on his erection? Something like that. Well, if I know you, he'll be giving you the D on the regular within 24 hours. I don't know if you sprinkle pixie dust on your cooch or what, sister, but I've never seen anyone with such power to produce boners in the male population. Now it's my turn to laugh. Oh, yes, didn't you know? That's my superpower. My boner-inducing supercooch. I'm saving the world with it, one man at a time. You should be almost there by now. Ha. Huh. Which brings me to my next question. Barney. My stomach tightens at the odd tone in her voice. That wasn't a question. Yeah, well, you should know that even though he was acting like everything was fine when we left yesterday, he spent the entire drive home white-knuckled, looking like he was about to go on a murder spree. I've never seen him so agitated. When I don't say anything because I'm mulling over that tidbit of information, Cat prompts, did Brody tell you what he said to him at the car? No. Did Barney tell you? No. But I got the distinct feeling from Barney's stabby vibe that he wasn't happy about it. The last thing I can add to my worry list right now is Barney. The worry list is already too full. He's a big boy. He'll be fine. Cat's tone turns hesitant. Was there, anything going on between you guys? Nothing other than a little harmless flirting, I answer truthfully. Somehow I don't think he took it as harmless. My office phone rings. Sweetie, I've got to get back to work. Can I call you later? Of course. And let me know if you want me to come shopping with you. I need some new lingerie. New lingerie? You have more lingerie than any woman I know. The baby-making efforts require a lot of costume changes. I laugh out loud. Will do. Talk to you later. Love you, Gracie. Love you too, Cat. When we hang up, I'm smiling. I answer my office phone with a brisk, Grace Stanton speaking. Hello, beautiful. Am I interrupting? Low and sexy, Brody's voice sends a rash of goosebumps up my spine. Hey, you. Why aren't you calling on my cell? Not that I mind. It's nice to hear your voice either way. Because it's been so long since you heard it? He jokes, though I can tell he's pleased. I lean back in my chair and put my feet up on the edge of my desk. Well, you know what they say. Parting is such sweet sorrow. And now she's quoting Shakespeare. Awesome. Good thing I paid attention in my English lit classes. I'm grinning, feeling stupidly happy all of a sudden. It's impossible for me to picture you sitting behind a desk in class. I bet you were the teacher's pet. Let's just say I got a lot of A's for no good reason. Being cute has its perks, hmm? Cute, he repeats, offended. Excuse me, Slick, but kittens are cute. Babies are cute. I am devastatingly handsome. It's hard for me to tell one way or the other with that giant ego obscuring my view. He chuckles. Is ego your code word for penis? Of course it is, Kong. You're much too intelligent for me to slip these things past. Speaking of penises, what time do you think you'll be finished at the office? I make a face at the phone. Has anyone ever told you that you're the absolute worst at changing subjects? He breezes right past that, saying, because I want to take you out on a date. A date? You sound like you've never heard of the practice. Let me inform you. So a guy likes a girl, right? And he wants to impress her. So he goes, hey girl, let's go get some food or something. I snort. Yes, that's very impressive. And she goes, I'd love to, you manly, manly man. And then he picks her up in his car and takes her to a fancy restaurant and spends a lot of money on dinner and wine and tries to be really cool with his conversation, so she's all impressed with him. Is this story going anywhere except Crazy Town? And then they go back to his place and he tries out all his super slick manly moves on her until she's dizzy with passion, and then they do it. Right. Except in our version of a date, we wouldn't do it because the guy is so busy respecting the girl, he's all discombobulated and thinks he can't possibly treat her with consideration and regard while also humping her into blissful oblivion, which is what the girl wants more than anything. So actually the guy is disrespecting her by not allowing her to get her freak on with him. Jeez, when you put it that way, I sound like a selfish prick. Hey, if the shoe fits. His voice drops. Allow me to correct you about something, however. I did let you get your freak on. The blatantly sexual tone of his voice makes me squirm. In a good way. Well, maybe a little. Only a little, hmm? We'll have to do something about that. Dear George Carlin in heaven, I certainly hope so. I turn the conversation to a safer topic before I stick my hand in my pants and start frantically grinding on it. I should be done here in about an hour, but I need to start house hunting. That's last on the to-do list, says Brody confidently, since you already have a place to stay, with amazing views and a fantastic landlord, rent-free. Rent-free? No. I'm not comfortable staying there without paying you anything. Brody's pause is unnaturally loud. If you ever say anything so stupid to me again, I'll take you over my knee. Not in a good way, before you get too excited. I can tell by his tone that he's dead serious. But what he doesn't know is that I'm dead serious, too. I pay my own way. I always have, and I always will. Nobody's giving me a handout, even if I do happen to be shagging him. Or whatever it is we're doing. We'll talk about this on our date. His tone turns from stern to playful. So you accept? You're right, I shouldn't be so hasty. Where are you taking me? Where do you want to go? No, that's not how this works. You're the guy, I'm the girl. You just told me you're supposed to pick me up in your car and take me out to wine me and dine me. I shouldn't have to decide where we're going. You're high maintenance, aren't you? Like super ultra mega high maintenance. I smile. I can afford to be high maintenance, Kong. I'm the one paying the bills. Not with me, you're not, Slick. I can tell this is going to be a sticking point. I say, chewing on the end of a pencil. What if we compromise? Sure, will compromise by having me pay for everything. I throw the pencil down. That's not a compromise, that's a dictatorship. No, a dictatorship is when I don't let you have a say in anything. I'm just not letting you have a say in this one thing. His voice drops. And by the way, can I take a moment to say that when you're tied up, you're the sexiest, most beautiful, arousing, tantalizing, cock-stiffening woman ever in the history of mankind? You should see your eyes, Grace. You should see your face. The way you look at me makes me feel like a sex god. Fuck, I'm just hard thinking about it. My heart starts to beat faster. My mouth is suddenly dry. Another random topic change, but thank you. Feeling something like shyness, I add, I like the way you look at me, too. Yeah? What else do you like? His voice has gained that gravelly edge it gets when he's aroused. Hearing it sends a ripple of pleasure down between my legs. I like the way you touch me. How do I touch you? I close my eyes, remembering. Like, you're trying to memorize my body with your hands. I am. With my hands and my mouth. I nearly groan aloud. His mouth. Oh, yes, his mouth. Your pussy is the sweetest thing I've ever tasted, Grace. He whispers. You're so fucking sweet. My nipples tingle under my blouse. I like the way you taste, too, and the way you feel in my mouth. You were so hard for me. I'm hard for you right now, too. If I were there, I'd get you on your knees and show you just how hard I am. The memory of his hands around my head as he thrust his cock into my mouth makes me inhale a shaky breath. He hears it and makes that sexy growly noise I love so much. How do you want me to fuck you, sweetheart? The first time for real? How should I fuck you? From behind, on your knees, your wrists tied behind your back? The sound that comes out of my throat is one I'm almost certain I've never made before. It doesn't even really sound human, but more animal, guttural and low. Yes, you like that idea. He chuckles. Or how about I tie you to one of the posts on the bed in your room and fuck you that way, standing up, your legs wrapped around my waist? I lick my lips. There's an ache between my legs, growing hotter. When I don't say anything, Brody's voice gets harder, somehow even sexier. Or how about if I make you suck my hard cock while I punish your perfect ass for coming before you were told? And then I tie you up, and then I lick your sweet little clit until you're begging me for release, and then I spank you some more until your ass is pink with my handprints and you're dripping wet all down your thighs, and then I fuck you, nice and slow and deep, sucking and biting your nipples as my cock drives into your throbbing pussy until you can't take it anymore and you come so hard all the neighbors will hear you screaming my name. I'm panting. Literally panting, like I just ran a sprint. My nipples throb. The ache between my legs has turned into a pulse. I restlessly press my thighs together and feel how wet I am. Yes.
Yes, what?
Yes, that. I want it that way, the first official time.
Say please.
Holy fuck, the way he says those words. The power, the confidence, the absolute dominance in his tone. It makes me whimper with want.
I'm waiting, Grace.
I whisper, please. There's a moment where we just breathe at each other. Then Brody asks,
are you there alone?
Yes. I mean, the main door outside is unlocked so anyone could come in.
Go lock it.
24. He doesn't have to ask me twice. I jump to my feet and hustle my ass across the office so fast I practically leave burn marks in the carpet. I lock the outer door to the waiting room, and then I close and lock my office door as well for good measure. When I sit back down at my desk, I'm breathless with anticipation. Okay, done.
Do you have a mirror in your office? A big one, like a wall mirror?
I slowly swivel in my chair and look at the full-length mirror I installed on the back of my office door so I could check my appearance before meeting with clients. Reflected in it, I'm bright red, my cheeks burning. Barely breathing, I say,
"Yes." "Tell me what you see."
I know what he wants, so I give it to him. I see me, all flushed and excited with red cheeks, sitting in my office chair. He makes a sound of approval.
"Describe what you're wearing."
He already knows because he spent the morning with me, but I'll be damned if I'm going to point that out. A white blouse that doesn't fit too well across the chest, a black pencil skirt and a pair of nude heels that are a size too big. They're Chloe's because Kat's feet are smaller. I'm flustered, so I'm adding on important details, but Brody doesn't seem to care. He says,
"A blouse that doesn't fit? We can't have that. Unbutton it."
With shaking fingers, I unhook the small white buttons down the front of the blouse. Beneath it, I'm braless.
"Tell me,"
Brody demands. I've unbuttoned it, down to the top of my skirt. I'm not wearing anything underneath. I can see my skin, my cleavage. His voice caressing, he says,
"Open it wider. Tell me what you see."
I use my free hand to open the shirt wider, lifting it back until both my breasts are exposed. I've never really looked at myself like this when I'm aroused. I look
different.
I whisper, "There's a flush all over my chest. My nipples are hard. They're pink against my pale skin. Dark pink. The pulse is pounding in my neck." Brody softly groans.
"God, I love your nipples. Touch them."
I cup a breast in my hand, rubbing my thumb back and forth over the taut nub of my nipple, and then do the same to the other one. Sparks fly along all my nerve endings, headed in a fiery path straight down to my pussy. I shift restlessly in the chair.
"It feels good,"
I whisper, panting softly.
"Tingly. I can feel it between my legs when I touch my nipples, like there's a current connecting them." "Pull up your skirt."
His tone is tense, focused, almost harsh. I obey him without hesitation, sliding my skirt up my thighs until I see the shadowed cleft between them, reflected in the mirror like a secret waiting to be discovered. I whisper,
"I'm not wearing panties." "I know you're not, baby. You have one pair at my house, the pair you wore under the polka dot dress, but you didn't want to wear those today, did you?"
"No."
"Why not?"
The question is so gentle, yet so full of dark laughter it makes me shiver. He knows why I didn't wear panties today. He knows exactly why.
"For you,"
I whisper. I'm mesmerized by the rapid rise and fall of my chest. The way the sunlight from the window spills across my bare thighs, trembling ever so slightly. How dark my eyes look with the pupils dilated so wide. In the afternoon light, my hair is the color of blood. I've been told I'm pretty by enough men to believe it must be true. But now, sitting in my comfortable leather office chair with my legs spread and my breasts exposed, staring at myself in a state of full arousal in a mirror I've only ever used to brush a stray wrinkle from a suit jacket, I feel that pretty is too anemic, too dainty a word for the savage creature staring back at me. I'm not pretty. I've never been less pretty in my life, or felt more fucking beautiful.
"You make me feel so beautiful,"
I say, my voice breaking.
"Because you are, Grace. You are."
My heart is beating like a hammer. I can't catch my breath. My hands are damp and shaky.
"You know what I want you to do,"
says Brody softly. As if I'm a spectator, I watch as my hands drift from the arm of the chair over my thigh and dip slowly between my legs. I suck in a breath when I feel how ready I am.
Tell me.
I'm very wet and sensitive. It feels swollen, hot. He growls.
Stroke your hot little pussy, Grace. Let me hear you stroke it.
The moment my fingers glide over my engorged clitoris, I moan. Brody mutters an oath under his breath.
Tonight I'm gonna spank you while you play with yourself.
Yes, I whisper, my fingers moving faster. Yes, please.
Spread your legs wider, baby. Watch yourself in the mirror.
I can't get closer to the mirror because of the phone cord, so instead of scooting the chair over to the upholstered ottoman a few feet away, I simply raise my leg and rest it on the edge of the desk. The view is disturbingly intimate and undeniably sexy. Listening to my ragged breaths, Brody softly warns,
"Don't make me ask you again to tell me what you see."
I'm so wet, I'm glistening. My pussy lips are plump, pink, and very...
Very what, baby?
Voluptuous? Provocative? I don't know the right word. They just look... He hisses.
Like they need to be fucked.
Oh. It's hardly a sound from my mouth. Just a little breath of startled air, forced out by the sudden violent urge to feel him inside me, to have his cock and mouth and hands possessing me, bending me to his will.
Stroke your clit, Grace. Pinch it between your fingers and stroke it.
My fingers glide through my wetness. I pinch my clit as he instructed, moaning because it feels so good. My hips start to rock in time with the strokes of my fingertips.
Faster,
he says, his voice tense and hot. Yes, I whisper, watching myself in the mirror. Oh God, Brody, I'm so wet. I'm getting it all over my hand, the inside of my thighs. It's slipping down to my ass. A snarl of frustration comes through the phone.
My cock is throbbing so hard for you right now. I'm standing in a conference room with glass windows in the middle of a record label's offices, and I'm half a second away from taking out my dick and coming all over this big polished oak table. Fuck, Grace. Fuck.
I say breathlessly, my thigh muscles are all tensed. My hips are rocking back and forth. My breasts are bouncing. I'm rocking so hard. I'm riding my hand and wishing it was you, and oh, oh.
Come for me, Grace,
commands Brody in a throaty rasp. Instantly I do. It hits me so hard I can't make any noise at first. My back arches. My eyes snap shut. My head slams against the headrest. In Chloe's two big shoes, my toes curl. The first clench is an entire body clench, every muscle tensed to full capacity. Then come the contractions, waves of pulsing that radiate violently from my core. They shake my body one after another. I slide my fingers inside myself, desperate to be filled, and cry out. In my ear, Brody is whispering,
"Yes, baby, come for me. God, you're so beautiful. You're a fucking dream, my gorgeous fucking girl. Come. Come."
I sob, climaxing around my fingers, lost to the strong rhythmic tightening and releasing of my inner muscles, lost to the sensation, to the pleasure, to him. I'm lost to him, brought to orgasm by the simple magic of Brody's words in my ear. I'm completely lost. And I'm terrified. This is what I've been so careful to avoid all along, this loss of boundaries, this opening of the gates, this love bullshit which ruins more lives than it saves, and now has me so unexpectedly in its clutches. Me, the tiger, me, The lion, me, the biggest disbeliever of them all. Panting, sweating, shaking helplessly, I open my eyes and look at myself in the mirror once more. I'm a mess. A satisfied, terrified mess. When Brody asks me to tell him what I see, I can't answer. There aren't any words for when a woman discovers every fear she's ever had are all starting to come true.
25. Brody. After the phone call with Grace, I have another hour of meetings with the execs at my label, but all I can think about is her. Why can't I keep my promise that we're going to be friends for the next month? Every time she touches me, I fall apart. She doesn't even have to touch me. Just hearing her voice makes me fall apart. All the willpower in the world couldn't save me from this reckless drive to have her. I hate myself for being so fucking selfish. Her life is in upheaval. Everything she owned except her car and the clothes on her back is gone, and all I can think about is getting her naked. I'm a dick. A dick with no self-control, the worst kind. And here I was, so convinced after I saw the priest that day on the way to the hospital that I could do the right thing, that I could do good, that by doing good by her somehow, I could make restitution for the time I'd been so bad. I give myself a stern talking to on the drive from Hollywood back to Malibu. Traffic is shitty, as usual, so it's a long talk. I make a stop to pick up a gift for Grace and get home just as it's getting dark. She isn't there yet. It doesn't surprise me how disappointed I am by that. Magda gives me a lifted eyebrow when I walk in the door, but I'm too lost in my own thoughts to pay much attention. I pour myself a scotch, go outside to the back patio, and stand looking out at the ocean as I nurse my drink, listening to my demon chuckle darkly in my ear.
26. Grace. 20 minutes. That's how long it takes to file a claim with my insurance company for the loss of everything I own. I've had manicures that lasted longer. Luckily, I kept extremely detailed records of all my belongings, right down to photographs, purchase receipts, and written value estimates from my jeweler for each piece of jewelry in my collection. I'm no Elizabeth Taylor, but I did have some beautiful things. It says a lot about me that I almost mourn my lost vibrator collection more. It feels so strange to drive down Malibu instead of Century City when I head home. I'm putting quotes around the word in my head because I refuse to allow myself to start thinking about Brody's place as anything other than a temporary pit stop. That would be putting the cart way before the horse. Even after shopping for 3 hours for new clothes, I'm still rattled by what happened today on the phone with him. I still feel like I'm walking around missing a layer of skin. If I thought I was a goner before, now my armor has been completely stripped away. I'm just a bundle of exposed nerves, feeling everything too strongly. I pass a hotel on Pacific Coast Highway and almost turn in the drive, but at the last second I convince myself not to be such a coward. A few more nights at Brody's until I find a place won't kill me, and he deserves, at the very least, to be kept informed of my plans. Not that I have plans, per se. It's more of a general sense of panic that I should be doing something more to keep myself safe. How do people walk around like this, so soft and open, experiencing everything in such glaring color, such jarring volume? I feel so naked, like an egg peeled out of its shell. The first time I jumped out of a plane at 20,000 feet, I had the exact same sensation, only this time I'm not wearing a parachute. About a mile out from Brody's on PCH, my phone rings. I pick it up with the hands-free button on the steering wheel. Grace Stanton speaking. A deep baritone rumbles through the car. Grace. Marcus, how are you? Worn out from the three little piggies yet? I just saw the news. About my building, he means. It's been all over the local newspaper and news station. His voice is full of concern when he asks,
"You all right?"
I think about how to answer that. I'm coping. It's not the end of the world. I laugh feebly. Honestly, ex-fuck buddy who's been friend-zoned, it's not my demolished condo that's the real problem. After a beat, he makes a gentle noise of understanding.
It's your demolished view of your heart as untouchable.
My eyes widen. You're spooky, you know that? Seriously, how would you even know I was talking about Brody from what I said?
Not to be crass, but I've spent a lot of time inside you, Grace. I know you better than you think I do.
I groan. God, you make me sound like a bus station. He chuckles.
At least you're an upscale bus station. I spent the remainder of the weekend at the Greyhound Depot on Skid Row.
I told you to watch out for that cross-eyed blonde.
Well, a man can't eat filet mignon every night. Every once in a while, a greasy burger from a street truck hits the spot just right.
I can't help but laugh. So, in a 10-second phone call, we've gone from comparing vaginas to public transportation and cuts of meat. I'm not sure how much lower this conversation can go. If you make a joke about beef curtains, I'll never speak to you again.
Oh,
he says, sounding interested.
You were planning on speaking to me again, even though you tossed my ass in the trash like yesterday's newspaper?
I roll my eyes. You're probably just being so pissy because the blonde stole your wallet, right?
I'm just worried about you,
he replies.
I know you hate being out of control, and between your new boy and your house blowing up, I'm thinking you're feeling about as out of control as it gets.
Fine. So he's insightful. So I might not have been as concrete and untouchable as I thought. If he knows me so well, maybe he can help me get a better grip on things, help me see things from a different perspective. I ask, "You're a man, right?" Marcus makes this disbelieving, offended snort. I imagine him sitting at his desk, staring at the phone, wondering who the crazy person is on the other end that he accidentally called.
"Last time I checked, great to know I made such a lasting impression."
What I meant to say was that I need a man's opinion. He sounds interested again.
"You need a male opinion? Since when?"
"Since right now. And don't make me out like such a raging feminist. I take male opinions into consideration all the time when I'm making decisions."
"Really? Name once."
I try to think of an example, but all I can come up with is when I asked Nico for his opinion about Brody. And if I'm being honest, if Nico had replied that Brody was a major asshole and I should absolutely stay away from him, I doubt that would have made a difference. I've been quiet too long because Marcus says,
"I already know you can't, so you could stop trying to think now. What's the question?"
"Okay, fine. If you told a woman who you were very attracted to that you wanted to be friends for a period of time, to get to know her better before having sex, what would the reason be?" Without a single breath of hesitation, Marcus says,
"Guilt."
I blank.
"Guilt?" "Yes. Because I did something wrong and I'm trying to make it right by denying myself the thing I really want from her. You told me this once for yourself when we were talking about how fucked up most people's relationships are. When a man exhibits sexual ambivalence toward his partner, it usually comes down to one of three things: a Madonna whore complex, confusion related to his sexual orientation, or guilt."
He pauses.
"Just a totally uneducated guess, because I don't know the guy, but your boy doesn't seem like the type for a Madonna whore hang-up, and he doesn't seem confused about which gender he prefers. So my money's on guilt."
"I was asking about you, not him." His tone turns dry.
"Sure you were. Because you know how often I tell women I want to fuck that I'd like to be friends and get to know them better first."
Couldn't he just be being a gentleman? Marcus pauses before answering. That was a joke, right? I'm hit with a memory. In the hospital on Valentine's Day, as we were all waiting for Chloe to have the baby, listening to Nico ask Brody about the stop he'd said he'd made on the way to the hospital, and watching Brody squirm over the answer. Strange. It was strange. But this whole friend's first proposal of his only happened after the condo situation. He was gung-ho for me before, wasn't he? Or did I sense some ambivalence before that? I can't recall.
You're not talking, Grace. It scares me when you're not talking.
I'm thinking.
I know. That's what scares me.
Flanked by a pair of towering palm trees, the large iron gate that opens to the driveway to Brody's guest house appears around the curve in the highway ahead. Marcus, I have to go, but thank you. You've given me something to think about.
More thinking,
he mutters.
Poor Brody.
Hey, whose side are you on?
Yours, lady. Always yours. You know where to find me if you need a friend.
Before he hangs up on me, he adds,
a friend who'll never have guilt about fucking you, by the way. Something to keep in mind.
When I pull into the driveway and turn off the car, I'm surprised to see rows of white votive candles flickering down both sides of the pathway that lead to the front door of the house. Brody must have lit them in anticipation of my arrival. How sweet, I think. Only to hear Marcus in my head shouting, guilty. Shut up, Marcus, I mutter. I grab as many bags as I can from the back seat and head inside. The front door is unlocked. More votive candles line the baseboards in the foyer, bathing the walls in a warm, romantic glow. Hello? I call out. No answer. I drop the bags on the floor and head into the living room where the pathway of votives leads. They flare out and surround the large L-shaped leather sofa and glass coffee table in a circle. On the coffee table are two wrapped presents, tied with red bows. I'm touched. It's obvious Brody put a lot of thought and care into this. I glance around, expecting him to be peeking around a corner, watching me with that roguish grin, but I'm alone. I sit on the sofa and tear into the first gift. It's a Polaroid camera. I haven't seen one of these in years, I muse, balling up the wrapping paper and tossing it aside. My first thought is that Brody must want to take pictures of me naked, without leaving digital files on his phone. Celebrities get their private email and phone accounts hacked all the time. This is smart of him. I approve. When I open the other gift, I understand what the camera is really for. It's a large rectangular book, bound in brown leather, thick with creamy parchment pages. Embossed in fancy cursive script on the front cover are the words, "Making Beautiful Memories." It's a scrapbook. A memory book. For me. With trembling hands, I open the cover and flip to the first page. In gold stickers attached to the top of the page are the words, "A look back." A cut-out newspaper story about me opening my practice in the famous Two Rodeo building in Beverly Hills is glued to the page, along with my black-and-white photo, fierce and unsmiling at 25, that accompanied the article. I wrinkle my nose. I always thought that picture made me look like Nurse Ratched from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. There isn't any life in my eyes. Next to the article is a picture of my graduating class at Stanford. It must be a printout from the internet. There's a URL in the white part in the upper left corner. I look at my scowling self, third from the left in the second row. Jesus, I whisper. Did you even know how to smile? I trace my finger over the grainy picture of my face, one of nearly identical hundreds in cap and gown. The commencement ceremony was held outdoors in the stadium on a blisteringly hot Sunday in May. I was sweating and unhappy in that black polyester gown. I got a sunburn that made my nose peel for weeks. Unlike my classmates, none of my family attended the ceremony. The dead aren't really good for that kind of thing. After the ceremony, I went straight back to my apartment and finished packing for my move to L.A. I left that night and never looked back. I didn't keep in touch with any of my classmates. I didn't leave a forwarding address. I haven't thought about college since. That ruthless lack of sentimentality I developed after the accident has served me well. Until now. I flip to the next page. More gold stickers at the top of the page declare, Besties Forever. Beneath is a collage of photos of Kat, Chloe, and me, taken in various places over the years. The pictures are cut in different whimsical shapes, hearts, ovals, squares with scalloped edges. He must have asked the girls for these. When? I pull my lips between my teeth and blink hard several times. On the next page is a single picture of Brody. It's a selfie, a Polaroid. He's lying in bed, smiling gently, his eyes heartbreakingly soft. The gold stickers at the top of the page are what finally cause the water in my eyes to crest my lower lids and slide down my cheeks. They read, My Knight in Shining Denim. His eyes in this picture. It's all right there in his eyes. The rest of the pages in the book are blank. The Polaroid camera is already loaded with film, ready to make more beautiful memories for me. Bowing my head, I hug the book tightly to my chest. I've never received a gift like this one, one so full of hope and kindness, one so full of love. I don't know how long I sit there like that before my phone chimes with an incoming text. I swipe at my eyes with my fingertips, set the book carefully on the coffee table, and retrieve my phone from my handbag where I left it near the door. It's a text from Brody. Magda asked if you're coming over for dinner, or if she should bring it over there. What voodoo magic spell have you cast, Slick? The woman hates everyone, but you've got her waiting on you hand and foot. I must know your secret. I text back. What happened to our date? Whining and dining? Picking me up in your car? His reply is swift. You try telling Magda you're going to a restaurant after she made a 17-course meal. I smile. It's so adorable that he's this big-shot rock star, but his life is run by his iron-fisted housekeeper. I approve of this, too. Every man needs a strong woman to keep him in line, no matter how powerful he is. I text him that I'll be there in 15 minutes. Then I change into a dress I bought this afternoon, a sexy green sleeveless number with a belted waist and a flowy skirt that hits just above my knees, and head over to the main house. By the time I get there, I'm shivering with cold. February at the beach is different than February in the city. I should have bought a jacket today. Item number 4,000 to go on the to-buy list. When Brody opens the front door, my eyes devour him. He's more dressed up than I've seen him, with the exception of Kat and Nico's wedding. He's in a fitted pale gray button-down shirt, open at the throat to reveal his golden skin and rolled halfway up his forearms, a pair of beautifully cut charcoal gray slacks, and black leather dress shoes. His normally air-dried, finger-combed hair is damp, slicked back from his face, perfectly neat. Contrasting these polished details are the hint of tattoo peeking from below the second button of his shirt, the small silver earring in his ear, and that leather cuff he likes to wear around his wrist in lieu of a watch. He looks partly like a king of Wall Street and partly like a bad boy with a dominant streak. In other words, panty-melting hot. The first thing he says is, You don't have to ring my doorbell, Grace. Just walk in. He reaches for me, pulls me over the threshold, and takes me into his arms. You're freezing cold. Shivering, I burrow against the heat of his chest. I know. I forgot to buy a coat today. Brody closes the door behind us with a kick of his foot. Rubbing his hands up and down my bare, goose-pimpled arms to warm them, he grins down at me, eyeing my dress.
I see you went shopping. Nice.
Smiling, I wind my arms around his neck. You'll think it's even nicer when you see what's underneath. His green eye is bright. He raises his brows.
I can hardly wait, he murmurs.
Then he looks at my face more closely.
Are you okay?
My smile wavers. I whisper, radical honesty. Tension invades his body. His arms tighten around me.
Yes, always. What's wrong?
I hide my face in his neck.
The present you got me?
You didn't like it.
He sounds devastated, which makes my heart throb.
I loved it. Brody, it's amazing. I've never had anyone do something like that for me. It's so romantic. It's so you.
He exhales a relieved breath. After a moment, he says,
I didn't do anything majorly stalkerish for the first part. I just searched your name on the internet to see what I could find to include about your past. There wasn't much except the pic from your graduating class at Stanford and that newspaper article.
When I don't respond, because there's a very good reason there's not much to be found about me on the internet, Brody continues.
I got the idea from the movie The Notebook. I started a journal, too. I'm calling it The Story of Us.
His voice falters, gets quieter.
In case, you know, there comes a time when I have to remind you who I am.
Fuck.
I keep my eyes closed, my face pressed to Brody's neck, and just breathe.
Hey,
he whispers, kissing my temple.
I'm okay,
I lie.
Then I blow out a hard breath and tell him the truth. Actually, Brody, I'm not okay.
I lift my head and stare into his eyes.
I'm terrified.
His gaze burning into mine, he cradles my face in his hands.
Sweetheart, why?
I can't find the right words. I stare at him for a moment, my heart pounding, my stomach in knots, until finally I do the only thing I can think of to make him understand. I take his hand and press it flat over my chest so he can feel the chaos inside.
Because of this. Because I've never felt this. Because before you, I had nothing to lose.
With a soft groan, he takes my face in his hands again and kisses me. It's hard and desperate, a kiss like a promise, a kiss like a vow, which his next words repeat.
I'm never gonna hurt you, Grace. Never. I swear to you. All I want to do is spend every day making you happy.
And if something happens with my memory? I ask, searching his face.
You said you could wake up one day and not remember me.
He says it like a statement, but there's a question behind it. I nod, waiting for the rest.
Have you had any problems since your accident with losing new memories?
No, I admit. But the doctors told me I could.
But you haven't,
he interrupts firmly.
And I've been thinking, when was the last time you saw a doctor about your memory?
10 years, I answer immediately. I remember the exact date. Brody repeats slowly.
10 years. You know what? It's time to get another opinion.
I shake my head, wanting him to understand how little hope there is. Nothing will have changed.
Or maybe everything will have. Maybe there's new technology. Maybe there's even something that could be done to help with regaining your old memories. A decade is a long time in the medical world, Grace. A decade is forever.
He makes it sound so reasonable. He makes it sound so possible. He makes it sound like it could be a storybook ending, that my knight in shining denim will be able to make everything right inside my head when no other force in the universe has been able to up to now. But he's trying. He's hoping. He's not giving up, which is more than I can say for myself. I gaze at him in wonder. How are you so perfect? How do you not have one single flaw I can find? Darkness crosses his face. It's like a curtain being drawn across a window, or a storm cloud passing over the sun. In a voice I've never heard him use, a terrible voice choked with self-loathing and regret, Brody says,
I have flaws. I just haven't told you what they are yet.
Something about those words makes me go stone cold. My thoughts fly back to the day in the hospital, to the strange way he acted when Nico asked him what had delayed him, his odd shifting gaze and red face. My pulse picking up its pace, I say, if we're really practicing radical honesty, now would be a good time to prove it. Briefly, his eyes close. When they open again, they're filled with darkness to match his voice.
Which do you want to hear first? The worst or the least worst?
The worst, I demand, pulling away so I can get a better look at his expression. Brody stares at me in silence so long I think he might not answer at all. But finally, in a harsh, bitter whisper, he says,
I'm a coward.
Everything inside me rebels against this judgment. No, that's not true. That's not true at all. A muscle in his jaw flexes. He swallows hard. His eyes shine like he has a fever. With horror, I realize it's because they're full of tears. I touch his face. He looks away, ashamed. Brody, I want you to tell me what you mean. He closes his eyes and inhales a deep breath through his nose. His hands drift to my shoulders. He gives them a squeeze.
I will. I promise I will. Just not tonight. I want tonight to be about you, not about me.
You said you didn't have any secrets. His head shake is full of sorrow, like his eyes when he opens them again and focuses his gaze on my face.
Not like you meant. I don't have a secret life. Illegitimate kids, a hidden drug problem, any of that. But I...
He trails off. This is excruciating for him to talk about. That much is obvious. Which makes my curiosity and my growing panic all the worse. Blinking rapidly, he takes another breath.
I once did something when I was very young. Something stupid.
My relief is huge, like a wave of water breaking over me. Oh, Brody, I whisper. Everyone did stupid shit when they were young.
Not like this.
The way he says that, the flat, absolute certainty of it, convinces me that he believes whatever he did is unpardonable. I can also tell he's punished himself for it 1,000 times over, in 1,000 different ways. Guilty, whispers Marcus inside my head. I say slowly, okay, we'll talk about this later, when you're ready. But I do have one question for you now. Brody stands in tense silence, watching me, waiting. Are you sorry? He answers without hesitation, his voice breaking over the words.
Every minute of every day.
He's telling me the truth. It's in every tortured look, every tremor in his body, every telling crack in his voice. I frame my face in his hands, deliberately looking deep into his eyes, I say, Then I forgive you. He stops breathing. His face drains of color. He stammers,
What?
Life goes on, Brody. We can't take back mistakes we've made. We can only try to do better in the future. If there's a way to make reparations, we do. But if there's not,
the only thing to be done is to learn and walk forward with new understanding, new kindness, new humility, and try to do good. All we can do is try our best to be good. If you're doing that, then no matter